this week, The Fruits of Your Labor, presenting educational topics to lodges and Masonic cons, is always nerve-wracking. You never quite know if you hit the mark unless somebody comes up and lets you know. Then we'll hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison in an all-new Masonic Minute about a famous hockey player. That's right, Tim Horton, as in Tim Horton's Donuts. Brother Steve explores the man, the myth, the legend behind the donut shop that bears his name, including the joys and the tragedies. We'll wrap it up with a piece from Randy Sanders. In this piece, we're talking about proper communication for the betterment of the fraternity, but not just the fraternity, also in life. How will anybody know how you feel and what you're willing to do if you don't say so? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 557. Right away, I want to thank the contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners, as always, for your help in producing this podcast. If you're out there and you're wondering on how you can help bring Masonic education, quality Masonic education, that is, and things of notable interest to those interested in the royal art and its kindred sciences, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see how you can assist. We've also got one-time donations. We've got a nice little shop that offers some great and unique items, including autographed books, as well as handmade items and producer's pins. And we've also got a bookstore, which has all of the books that are personally recommended by me, also books by those who've been on the show and recommended by our guests. All of those books are linked through Amazon and part of an affiliate program. So you use Amazon, the service you like, the author gets a sale, and the WCY podcast gets a few pennies back. Now, of course, it doesn't cost you any more than it would normally. It just assists this program. So thanks in advance. This week we've got a shorter program. I'm taking two of my sons and my daughter on a little road trip, and we've got to leave a little bit early. So, this week, light education, no pun intended. And the first piece that I wanted to get into is called Let There Be Light, and it's by Worshipful Brother Darren A. Laners. He says, I had the extreme pleasure of being able to give a presentation at the Grand York Rite Sessions for the three York Rite bodies in Illinois this past week. Not only was I blessed with the opportunity to chair the Grand Royal Arch Chapter's Education Committee for the coming year, but I was also installed as their Grand Orator. Maybe it's because I have a big mouth. At least, that's what I've been telling people. All kidding aside, it was a fantastic time. I was extremely honored to meet companion Timothy Hogan, who gave a very intriguing presentation about the esoteric traditions of the Knights Templar, and made a more coherent and well-researched argument for Templar influence upon modern ancient craft Freemasonry than Born in Blood. I presented on the influence of the legend of Enoch's Vault, and how it influenced many high degrees in both the York and Scottish Rite, and how it progressed over time from being a story about Enoch's Vault to becoming a vault that Solomon built under the Holy of Holies in the temple, and how this story is being perpetuated in pop culture through movies like National Treasure and television shows like Oak Island. However, the highlight of the event was having a brother come up to me and tell me that, in his many years in Freemasonry, this was the best thing he had seen. What it shows me unequivocally is how important Masonic education is and how much influence it can have. It also shows me, in reverse, that many craft lodges and dependent bodies are not taking the opportunity to present education as part of their meetings. To have many react, as they did to my and companion Hogan's presentations, was proof in my mind that there is at the core of Freemasonry a thirst for knowledge, and that many men join Freemasonry expecting to learn something either about themselves or their place in the universe, or the nature of the universe, and they walk away empty-handed. Now, is some of this on them? Sure, those that want to learn do. But then again, I think that maybe sometimes there's those of us who have taken up the reins of being Masonic educators, and we have a duty to spread light to those that haven't had the opportunity to receive it. So when a brother comes up to me and tells me that the educational presentations are the best thing he's ever seen in Freemasonry, well, you thank him for the kind words. Personally, there's nothing better than that for me, to know that something I presented touched another brother so deeply to have him come across the room after the presentations and tell me that. It brings everything into perspective for me. It gives me the fuel to keep forging forward with everything that I do for Masonic education. The accolades that matter are how you are remembered, not the titles, honorary memberships, degrees, etc. My hope is that when I'm long from this world, maybe some brother that isn't even born yet will happen upon my writing and feel like I know what I'm talking about. If I can be an influence like Mackey and Smith have influenced me, then there is in my mind no greater honor. It also tells me that the work must continue. Darren A. Laners. Now, I have to totally agree with this. I love when this happens, and it's so darn awkward. I think for a lot of us, we enjoy certainly being able to present to an audience of men and brothers. However, I'm sure many of you listening have had your chance to stand in front of a Masonic lodge and deliver a Masonic educational piece, and somebody has said to you how incredible it was or how much they enjoyed it. And within that, it definitely serves the right part of our egos, in that it allows us a little bit of good feels to know that we're making a difference and we're moving forward and we're going to continue to keep pushing Masonic education, because truly, it's what matters in the craft. For the Craftsman Plus, I'd love to hear about a time where you received some accolades after a presentation you gave. And also, if you've ever had a difficult situation in which somebody came up to you after your presentation and maybe did not enjoy it so much, and how you handled that. Now, Darren did make mention of his program that he presented on, and I talked with him briefly this last weekend after listening to an episode of his podcast that's called Meet, Act, and Part, that he does with some of the other Midnight Freemason contributors like Greg Knott, Todd Creason, and Bill Hosler. Now, in the particular episode I was listening to, I was just intrigued by what he was talking about. I gave him a call, and I said, "Hey, Darren, would you mind coming on the program, and we can talk a little bit? We'll have a conversation about this topic that you brought up on Enoch's Vault, because this is something that I find fascinating." And wouldn't you know, he acquiesced. So, we'll have him on the program soon to talk about this, and maybe we'll get to the bottom of it. But one thing's for sure, it'll be really fun. Next up, let's get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
If a Canadian brother ever takes you out for a cup of coffee and a donut, odds are he won't take you to a Starbucks, a Dunkin', a Krispy Kreme, or anywhere other than a Tim Hortons. Founded in 1964, the Tim Hortons chain has become a popular and iconic Canadian establishment which has expanded worldwide with nearly 5,000 restaurants in Canada, the US, the UK, Mexico, and other countries. It even has over 20 restaurants in communist China. In our neighbor to the north, Tim Horton is a household name. But who was he? There are at least two things most people, especially youth who only know Timmy's as a hip place to gather, do not know about Tim Horton. First, he was one of the greatest hockey players ever. Second, he was a Freemason raised in Croy Lodge 676 in Toronto. Born in Cochrane, Ontario on January 12, 1930, brother Miles Gilbert Tim Horton played in various levels of youth hockey as he steadily grew into a mountain of a man. A young standout, he signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs in 1949, where he played for most of his 22 years. At the time, there were only six teams in the National Hockey League. It was more popular in Canada, and there were no big million-dollar salaries. His first contract paid $9,000 per season. Not enough to make him rich, yet enough to provide for a comfortable living. Tim married Dolores Lori Michalek, an Icecapades performer, in 1952. Scouting reports on Horton claimed with his size and strength, he had the potential to become hockey's greatest defenseman. The reports were not wrong as he skated his way into becoming a member of four Stanley Cup teams, an NHL All-Star, and eventually a member of its Hall of Fame. In 2016, the Toronto Maple Leafs retired his number 7 jersey, and the following year he was named as one of the 100 greatest NHL players ever. Horton's ability and strength became legendary in the NHL. Hockey great Bobby Orr has said Tim Horton may have been the league's strongest player ever. Tim's trademark during a fight was to wrap his arms around an opposing player in a crushing hug. One commentator remarked, "You didn't get out of that vice grip until Horton let you out." A player Horton once punched was asked in an interview what it was like to take such a hit from the hockey Superman. "I'd rather he hit me," he said, "than get me in one of his bear hugs." Horton's fairy tale career, and even his life, nearly came to an end in 1955. In a game near the end of the season, Chicago defenseman Bill Gadsby slammed into him with a blow so hard it sent Tim to the ice, where he sustained a concussion, broken jaw, and broken leg. Gadsby later said it was the hardest hit he ever gave anyone. Back then, a disabled hockey player did not get paid. Horton missed the remainder of the 55 season and half of the next year as well. In the interim, Constantine "Con" Smythe, Maple Leafs owner, gave him a job as a truck driver. The job helped, but it did not meet his family's financial needs. This gave Tim incentive to work hard and to get back into the game. In 1964, in order to supplement his hockey income, Tim opened the first of his coffee and donut shops in Hamilton, Ontario. In 1967, he brought in Ron Joyce, an acquaintance who owned a local Dairy Queen, as a partner. The chain, known simply as Tim Hortons, was an immediate success, and together, Tim and Ron continued to expand the business. For the next few years, the restaurant chain and Tim's hockey career went well. Lori, weary of Tim's absences and bored, developed problems with alcohol. At the end of the 1973 season, she asked Tim to retire. Tim had fallen into the trap of drinking to celebrate his victories and also to drown the sorrows of his losses. He had been traded to the Buffalo Sabres by then, and he agreed to end his career. However, George "Punch" Imlach, the Buffalo coach, offered him $150,000 and a new Ford Pantera if he would play just one more year. Brother Horton agreed. Near the end of the season, he was injured and taking prescribed painkillers so he could continue to play. After a late season game in Toronto, Tim had a few drinks with his teammates, then called Lori and said he was driving home. She could tell the combination of painkillers and alcohol had affected him and begged him to wait until the next day to drive. Tim insisted he was okay, and in the early morning hours of February 21st, 1974, headed out in his new Pantera. In that car, his pride and joy, he only had two speeds, zero and greased lightning. Lori called the Ontario Provincial Police, and they set up roadblocks to stop him. He made it as far as St. Catharines, near the U.S. border, when he lost control of his car. It flipped several times, and Tim was thrown from the vehicle and killed. He was 44 years old. After Tim's death, Lori said, "I went into a daze for about 15 years. She sold her shares in the restaurant and all rights to use Tim's name to Ron Joyce for $1 million. Years later, after she stopped drinking, she realized the sale was a mistake and, in 1993, sued Joyce. She lost the lawsuit, which cost her most of her remaining savings. Tim's life was a cocktail of stellar success and tragedy. Today, his remaining children and grandchildren have no rights to the empire he built or his name. And to them, it may be of little consolation. That name is so well known in his country that it has become a part of the Canadian culture." For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
What an incredible tale. You know, I had known about Tim Horton and the donut store and whatnot. In fact, I think we even covered him on some of the early episodes of the podcast when we did famous Freemason segments. Now, I had no idea about the tragedy of Tim Horton, and I think a lot of times it's kind of like when you see a MTV or a VH1, those of you who might remember, and I'm kind of dating myself here, a Behind the Music. I used to love watching those to hear, you know, about the joys and happiness and struggles of artists. And of course, in sports, it's no different. Recently, a few years ago, I ended up watching and binge-watching the entire season. I've never been a fan of any kind of wrestling like WWF or WCW or whatever it goes by these days. But I, for whatever reason, caught myself watching this, you know, Behind the Ring or Dark Side of the Ring or something like that. And I found it so fascinating to see the real drama that unfolds in these athletes' lives. And certainly Tim Horton was no different in this tragic tale. Although we find some solace that, you know, his name does live on as this kind of national tradition. Every time I get in the car with my good buddy, he's an area education officer, Brother Eric Solomon, he brings his coffee. And his coffee cup is always a travel mug from Tim Horton's. But if you guys really enjoyed this segment, I encourage you to head on over to the podcast website, wcypodcast.com, and click on the bookstore. Check out Steve's books. All of his books are there, linked back to Amazon. They're fantastic. Many of them available in Kindle. Some of them only in Kindle because they are out of print. However, really great works. I enjoy all of his writing all the time. I don't know. I read his books in his voice. If you see Steve out there in the wild, give him a handshake or a fist bump and tell him thanks for all he does for the fraternity and especially for these Masonic Minute segments that you can find on YouTube as well. Little videos go along with these, and you can find his channel, The 1 Minute Mason. I'll link back in the show notes. And we also put them up on the podcast YouTube channel, so give them a like and a subscribe there as well. The last piece I wanted to read for you this week is another piece from the Midnight Freemasons, and this one comes from Brother Randy Sanders. Quite often, Randy Sanders comes to us with a point of view that hasn't always crossed, at least my mind, at all. And this is the beauty of Freemasonry, the ability to connect with other perspectives and see where people are coming from, then gives you a better objective truth to the matter. So this piece is called How Will They Know If You Don't Tell Them? By Brother Randy Sanders. Here we go. I always run late and miss the interfaith service on the morning of the Grand Master's breakfast. I don't know why, but it seems to be a tradition now. I may just keep that tradition and skip the Sunday service, although I hear it's nice. The breakfast and fellowship never disappoint, and I seem to find my way to the St. Louis Moolah Shrine Temple about the time the service ends each year, just in time to shake some hands and be seated at my lodge's table. This year being no exception, it was a nice, cool, rainy break from a run of near or over 100 degree days as I pulled into the mostly full, large parking lot. I knew I would see some of my favorite brethren from all over the state, and sure enough, they drove sometimes hours and hours to gather for the event. This year, all three youth organizations banded together for the first time to assist in serving the breakfast. And it was nice to see all three orgs working together, seamlessly. The Shriners were fantastic as always, and very welcoming in opening up the large hall for breakfast. I have the utmost respect and appreciation for the Shriners, even though it doesn't seem to be my path in Masonry. I encourage all Masons to do a deeper investigation into the Shrine to see if it fits with their path. The programming was good, and moved quickly through many introductions to the speaker, and then the closing remarks. And a few of us retired to a local cigar lounge for additional fellowship and lofty conversation over beverages of choice. Seems fairly pedestrian, right? Most of us experience some form of Masonic event across regional or even state boundaries, right? Well, no. And I hope to make this point. Many don't know all Masons are welcome and encouraged to attend these functions. I know many Masons that have never visited even a neighboring lodge. And that makes me a little sad. We must communicate and encourage others to attend these events, and especially attend events like our Grand Lodge communications. I often hear those events are for quote-unquote apron chasers who belong to all the organizations, or that these events are for officers and those quote-unquote chasing gold by wanting to be appointed to higher offices. Believe me when I say that that is not the case. Yeah, I suppose we do have a fair number of brothers who do chase the gold, but that's no different than any organization, right? It took me a few years to get past my preconceptions to understand attendance to Grand Lodge functions helps demonstrate your voice. And your voice is important. Your voice is certainly as important as mine, and probably more so. I also had to come to my own realization about those chasing the gold, as I used to think the same thing. I admit I had a jaded view of organizational management when I joined the craft. And that initial bias carried over to sarcasm and even some dismissive views toward Grand Lodge at the regional and state levels. After all, what and who were these people to me? I found out differently as I met and spoke with these fine gentlemen who give up so much time with family and friends in order to serve the fraternity. Yeah, we may occasionally get a Grand Master here and there in some jurisdictions that may not be the best, but I have found that to be a rarity. We in Missouri are very fortunate to have very strong Grand Line, both past and present, and I'm excited for the future of the craft. If you will take the time to talk to your Grand Line officers, your Masonic experience will be enriched. Taking the time to engage and work with your Grand Line officers, or simply showing up at functions to show support, makes a difference. My Grand Line officers know I'm not chasing aprons nor interested in ever becoming a Grand Line appointee. How do they know that? I told them. I just don't see Masonic administrative leadership as being my path in Freemasonry, when my focus remains on helping others through education, communication, and mentoring. I also told these same Grand Line officers they could count on me if needed, or as needed, to get things done. These private conversations with the Grand Line officers pay off in ways we may never see, by making our interests known, by making our voices heard, by showing up and simply having a good time in fellowship with our brethren. We set many wheels in motion behind the scenes. If you want to serve on a committee or serve in other ways, how will they know if you don't tell them? If you want to support your Grand Lodge but not serve on a committee or by appointment, how will they know if you don't tell them? If you are able to provide brotherly love, relief, and truth in some way to your district, region, or Grand Lodge, how will they know if you don't tell them? Randy Sanders. This is a great piece and really drives home the idea of proper communications. The ability to have good communications across the board with anybody, whether brothers or your wife, your spouse, your husband, whatever that might be, this open communication is so important. And then, of course, sometimes it may be necessary that you talk a little bit about why you feel a certain way before you just let the cat out of the bag. And I think that helps soften the blow sometimes. But in many cases, this open line of communication is so important, and especially is no different within the craft I am reminded of many years ago at my home, at my mother lodge, which was Waukegan Lodge number 78 in Waukegan, Illinois, where I had served as a line officer for 7 or 8 years and of course master, and then I was a secretary for 3 years. It came out, believe it or not, I had never told my lodge brothers that I had done a podcast on masonry, even though I had been doing it for 4 years at the time. And the treasurer of my lodge came up to me and he said, his name was Michael, and Michael said to me, "You know, it's really great that you do this podcast and that you're out there doing education for Freemasonry, but how can we support you in this work if we don't know about it?" And I was a little embarrassed. I was embarrassed because I didn't tell them, and I was also embarrassed because if I had told them, how do you tell somebody you do something without feeling like you're gloating about it or trying to brag about something? Or maybe there was just a stigma that these guys were older and maybe didn't care about a podcast, or as I sometimes call it, an internet radio program, for those who might not know what a podcast is. I failed in my ability to have an open line of communication and to actually be brothers with my brothers. And what do I mean by that? I simply mean that there are times in your life where you need to be able to be open with your brothers about a great many things so that they can celebrate with you, so that they can grieve with you. And in this case, I would have been able to have an even greater support network, but I was shy and I was, I don't know, just kind of weird about telling people I did a podcast. I guess don't make those same mistakes. Follow Randy's advice. Have those conversations. Let people know when you can help and what you're interested in helping in, and that way they can come to you. I mean, after all, you don't want to end up, you know, late in life and think to yourself, nobody ever called on me to do anything. Because maybe you didn't say anything, and that's why they didn't call on you. People want to be nice to you. And so sometimes being nice is just leaving you alone. Just some food for thought. For our Craftsman Plus, I'd love to hear about any time you had this difficult conversation about perhaps turning down or accepting a role. That's it for this week. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I want to thank the fellows, contributors, producers, and legacy partners for helping bring this program to anybody interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. If you're curious on how you can help bring Masonic education to the world in a quality format that is trustworthy, that is not some clandestine source of weird information and anti-Masonry, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the various ways you can assist. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode. As always, until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
That's it. Okay, girl.